It is time now for our weekly State Capitol Report. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, May the 16th. And Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson is with us with the latest on a lot of big policy changes that are moving through the state legislature, everything from expanding school vouchers to voter ID to concealed carry legislation and much more. And we welcome your input during this hour. We have Sean with us for the whole hour this time around. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We will also be welcoming in, after the 7:30 news, Wisconsin Public Radio reporter Chuck Kornbach, who will be with us to talk about Senator Cole's press conference on Friday, when Senator Cole announced he would not seek another term, he's not going to run for re-election. Chuck was at that press conference, and we'll talk a little bit about that issue as well. So let me welcome first Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio, state government reporter. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
Lots and lots to talk about here, but let's talk first, before we get into some of these big policy changes, talk about this new money that is being forecast for state coffers. Apparently, tax revenues are up, and we're going to have hundreds of millions of more dollars to play with.
Well, I mean, these are estimates for the next few budget years, the remainder of this year and then the next two fiscal years, which comprise the budget that lawmakers are debating right now. And over that span, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau says that the state of Wisconsin is probably looking at $636 million more in revenue than had been projected before. And so that as lawmakers are crafting this budget, they should bear in mind that they have this money here that will be flowing into the state's coffers. It's certainly different than the announcements that we've gotten used to when it comes to revenue estimates, where for a couple of years, it seems like every time there were new estimates out, things were at worse. So, this is definitely a change from that perspective.
And this means generally that more of us are employed and more of us are paying taxes.
It's coming from the income tax. And actually, I mean, like sales tax income is actually down. It's lower than projected. Some other taxes are lower, but income tax projections are up, and that's what's driving this here.
So the $636 million could pay for a part of that $900 million cut to local schools, couldn't it?
That is potential. Obviously, the governor was, a couple of key lawmakers and the governor held press conferences as this money was announced, and the governor said, you know, we have this money. It begs the question of what do you do with it? And this was his answer.
We're going to do what families have been doing all across Wisconsin. We're going to ultimately pay off our bills. We still have bills that are forthcoming right away. We owe from the past. We owe the state of Minnesota for the reciprocal agreement of nearly $60 million. And we owe from what the state was involved with in the past, with the patient compensation fund and the legal action that was taken several years ago and acted on last year. We know we owe more than $200 million plus interest to repay that fund from the actions that were taken several budgets ago. We need to pay off those bills right away and other bills that are on the horizon.
So no mention of schools in there. So he was asked a couple things. One, does this lessen the need for his collective bargaining plan? He said that it did not, that collective bargaining plan was needed for long-term budgeting. And then he was also asked whether the money should be used to mitigate the cuts to schools.
The fact is, we have mitigated the cuts. Overall, we've given local school districts more than enough savings to offset any reductions in state aid collectively across the state of Wisconsin. Those tools need to be there not just for this budget, but they need to be there for the next budget 2 years from now and 4 years from now.
Democrats had a different take. Mark Pocan, who was the legislature's budget committee co-chair a couple of years ago, noted that it was about this time when the Fiscal Bureau came out with its revised estimates a couple of years ago that the state found out it was even deeper in the hole because of a downturn in the economy. And so he said described this news as, you know, very welcome news. He said great news.
They just found a tremendous gift of over $600 million additional that they can now use to solve some of the real draconian cuts that Governor Walker did, whether it be in education, gutting senior care, or the UW system. So I think this is a real opportunity for the Republicans to fix the really terrible budget the governor put together, and I think that we can do this without having any tax increase for taxpayers. So it's really a win-win if used properly.
But it doesn't sound like the Walker administration is going to use that money to offset any cuts, or at least not.
They're not talking about it. The current co-chairs of the budget committee, Robin Voss and Alberta Darling, said we pay these bills first and then we'll talk about some other stuff. Alberta Darling has said senior care, recycling, transportation aid for local governments. But, you know, it's significant beyond just having an uptick in the economy. I mean, the whole selling point for this budget and the deep cuts therein up to this point has been, you know, it's not like we want to do it, but the state's broke. The state's broke. I mean, we've heard this over and over again. And so now you have this money, and it's not like this is, it's, you know, as a percentage of the budget, it's not a windfall by any means. But you're at a point now where $636 million more than you thought, it makes it harder to make that the state's broke argument.
You know, let's talk a little bit about voter ID. That bill did make it through the assembly, was it last week?
Yes, yeah. It passed through the assembly, and, you know, as it has done many times in the past, but this is the bill that's, this is likely the bill that's going to be headed to the governor's desk for a signature this year.
Yeah, and the reason I wanted to bring this up is that this has a pretty hefty price tag to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's roughly $7 million, you know, by the time you implement the training, by the time you pay for IDs for people who don't have them already, change the state's, you know, if the University of Wisconsin wants to have IDs that comply with this, there will be changes needed there. So there's a price tag for the voter ID bill, and you know, that's one that Republicans are comfortable paying.
Yeah, and so maybe that $636 million could be used for that.
A portion of that, yeah, perhaps. I mean, that's something that I mean, the money isn't exactly budgeted in the bill that they passed last week, but they're going to take care of that down the road.
So tell us what the key points of what passed in the assembly. Pretty much the bill we've been talking about for the past few weeks, or are there any big changes there?
It's pretty much the bill that we've been talking about. A couple changes, though. I mean, they did modify it so that there was some question over whether there'd be any student IDs accepted. Student IDs will be accepted, you know, as long as they're modified to fit a certain form. Also, they could only be accepted for 2 years. So instead of a student, you know, keeping their ID for 4 years and using that to vote, you'd have to get a new one after your first one was, you know, 2 years old. So
and again,
you'd be able to
vote. The ID, the student ID, must have a local address on it, and most UW system campuses don't have that. And
I mean, right now mm-hmm. they don't have it, and they won't have to have it under this bill either, but it will check compared to a list on it at an accredited university.
Okay.
To make sure that the ID matches up. So, you know, that was another change. Also, 28, you'll need a 28 day period. You'll have to live somewhere for 28 days before you can vote there. Right now it's 10 days.
Yeah, what's the point of that?
I mean, the sponsors said that it would bring Wisconsin in line with other states. And as you know, you listen to them rattle off states that have this. Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are other states that require you to live in the state longer than 10 days, which is Wisconsin. What's interesting about that 28 days thing, beyond it being, you know, just a change in the way that the election systems run here, as whereas the rest of the bill would take effect next year, you know, for the 2012 elections, this piece of the bill would take effect immediately. And so if they pass this bill and pass the budget in short order, because they're sort of linked together, you would have this 28-day requirement in place for the recall elections, which, And you didn't really, you didn't hear an answer as to why it needed to be in place for the recall elections other than they wanted to do that. Democrats said it was changing the rules in middle of the game, basically.
Yeah, and the photo ID would not be required for the recall elections, which right now I think July 12th was one of the
dates. Yeah, and that's a little confusing too because they'll
ask for it.
Yeah, and you know, so they'll go through the motions, but if you don't have it, you can still vote. And I guess that's part of the soft implementation that sponsors are talking about, where they want to get people used to it.
If you have not lived in the state for or a city, a community for 28 days, you can still vote in your previous community.
Right, you can
presume.
Vote where you lived before, whether that's another state or if you're a college student back at your parents' address. But the old 10-day requirement, and that goes for if, you know, you went to the polling place and you only had a bill, a utility bill that was 10 days old in the past, that would be able to, you know, that would be a proof of residence. Not anymore, though.
Yeah, well, this is probably going to be taken up by the Senate this week, and most likely it will pass. Yes, Sean?
I would say most likely, yeah. I mean, I don't think... this version went through basically the legislature's budget committee and had support from both senators, Republican senators and Republican assembly lawmakers, Republican representatives. And so this appears to be the version that's going to go through, and that the author in the assembly who's authored these things year in, year out, only having vetoed by Governor Jim Doyle, said this is the time. This is what's finally going to pass.
Voting is a right. We have many rights in this country, but there are responsibilities. There's no right to have the government come to your home and collect your vote or come to where you are. You have to put forth effort to participate in democracy. That's the way it works. That's the way the world works.
So that's the way it works, he says.
I mean, you had a familiar refrain from Democrats that, this is going to, practically speaking, even though everybody will have the opportunity if they want to go out and take these extra steps to vote, practically speaking, you're going to have certain groups of people who will not vote, who vote now. And that's the message from Janet Bewley of Ashland.
What we are trying to do is to just push aside whole categories of people. The poor, the elderly, those who may have to move about more frequently than someone else, those who have just a few more burdens than most of us. And the burden of getting an ID will be just the thing that will prevent them from doing what they have been legally allowed to do all along. They have done nothing wrong.
And so then if you break that down and you start looking at the groups that may not vote, college students or, you know, poor people in the inner city, the fear for a Democrat is that you shave off, a few hundred or a few thousand of those votes in a statewide election. You know, think about the close statewide elections we've had in Wisconsin, especially the 2000-2004 presidential elections. If those people stay home because it's there are more steps to voting than they care to take, that's the type of thing that could tip a very close statewide election.
We will continue talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about voter ID, about concealed carry legislation, about other big policy issues that are moving through the state legislature. And we'll welcome your reactions and your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be a mostly sunny day today with highs in the upper 50s in the eastern half of the state to the lower 60s in the west. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter. This is our state capitol report, and we are summing up a busy week in state government, and we'll also take a look at what's coming up. And, Sean, we have a caller on the voter ID legislation that we'll take first before moving on. Edwin in Eau Claire. Hi, Edwin.
Hi. My question is, usually our midterm voting is in September, and the students start back to school in September. That won't give them 28 days.
I mean, it's a possibility that, you know, this is another...
Well, that's wrong.
Well, that's what the legislature did. So I mean,
the sponsor's answer would be that you're not disenfranchised. You just have to vote elsewhere.
You vote in your previous community before you came to...
Yeah, but what if they're at the bottom of the state and they have to go to school? I mean, come on. The voting day's on a Tuesday. They miss class to drive 8 hours to go home or 5 hours to go home.
Yeah. What about absentee voting, Sean? That you also have to have provide a photo, I think, to do that as well.
You know, I'm not sure where that ended up in the finance proposal. I should know that, but I don't have that summary right in front of me. They made some changes back and forth on absentee voting.
Yeah, you know what? Edwin's right. If there's a primary on whatever, September 14th in Madison, and a UW-Madison student comes here, the very beginning of September,
right,
that person is not a resident of Madison until 28 days have passed.
Correct. Yeah. And there was talk about moving the primary from September to August as part of this bill. They're not going to do that as part of this bill, though. And that wasn't to address student concerns, I don't believe. I mean, that was for military voters complying with federal requirements. But so, yeah, I mean, that is one of the practical issues where if you want to vote where you're going to school, you can definitely see a scenario where you wouldn't be able to under this bill.
So to recap, this legislation would require voters to show a state government issued ID in order to vote, mainly starting in the 2012 elections, but some of these changes start as soon as the recalls.
The 28-day requirement starts right away. Also, you'll be signing a poll book now as part of that, the new requirements of this bill that are going to take effect immediately. And then another timing piece of this bill, right now you can vote early in Wisconsin, if you go to the clerk's office for a month before the election up until the Monday before the Tuesday election, you know, the day before the election, this bill would shrink that window to 3 weeks and cut it off at the Friday before a Tuesday election. So there's all sorts of timing issues. And I confess to not being completely familiar with each and every one of them. And it'll be a little bit of a learning curve for the clerks around the state, too.
Well, you know, before our news break, let's talk a little bit about the concealed carry legislation, public hearings in Madison and Wausau last Thursday on one bill that would allow you to carry a concealed weapon without getting a special permit or any special training or even background checks. That's called constitutional carry. And then there was another bill that would establish a permitting process, but no special training necessarily.
No training in either of those, in either the bill that was up for hearing in Madison or in Wausau. And there was a political cartoon that was being passed around at the hearing in Madison that I thought was, you know, it caught my eye and I thought really summed up the issue as it stands this year. Because, you know, in the past, Governor Doyle has been sort of portrayed as the villain on this issue if you're a gun rights supporter. This year, there's this political cartoon being circulated, WisconsinGunOwners.org, and they're holding, it's all Republicans in this cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans who are supporting this bill that requires a permit but no training, including the NRA, is portrayed as a snake. You know, you kind of get the impression that they're trying to mislead gun-owning voters. And then you've got these people in the background, lawmakers, Republican lawmakers, who support constitutional carry, and they're being stifled. You can tell they're being stifled by the Republican Assembly Speaker here. At the bottom of the cartoon, there's a little note saying, constitutional carry is the litmus test by which voters will judge future Republican primaries.
Oh, so they're getting tough here.
So Todd Welch is state coordinator for the Wisconsin Campaign for Liberty, and he was the one distributed this. There's a few people. He was distributing this political cartoon and sort of explained what it meant.
Well, essentially, we're trying to make sure people know that the right to bear arms is a right. It's not a permission afforded by the government. With the gun permit bill that the NRA and MRSA, for example, is pushing, would turn our right into a permission that we'd have to beg the government to get. A right kind of entails, just like your right to freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom to, or right to vote and such, means that it's yours, and they don't have the right to take that away or demand things from you to get it back.
And he referred to MRSA. That's Representative Jeff MRSA, who's sponsoring the bill that would require a permit. And you can view that cartoon at WPR.org/joy. But there, so the push at this point among law enforcement, like Dane County Sheriff Dave Mahoney, is to get training required as part of the bill, some type of training, given that they're probably going to pass a concealed carry bill this year. And Mahoney said that, you know, there are so many other activities where the state requires some kind of training before they'll trust you with the activity.
When you crawl behind the wheel of your car or place your seat on a Harley-Davidson motorcycle, before you do so, we don't allow it until you prove that you can do it safely and with a certain skill set.
And they said for law enforcement, they require regular training to be able to use their guns. For hunters, there's you know, several hours of training required to be able to hunt in Wisconsin. And so that, you know, for handguns, concealed weapons, they want something like that as well.
No legislative committee action scheduled on this concealed carry so far?
None yet, mm-hmm. You know. And so, you know, there's going to be a push among some Republican lawmakers for this training.
We will talk more with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, after we check the latest news. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Monday, May the 16th. It is now 7:36. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, stays with us during this half hour to bring us up to date on some other big policy changes that are moving through the state legislature. We'll probably touch on concealed carry once again. We'll talk about expanding the school voucher program and some other issues as well in just a few minutes. But first, we are going to talk about another big development in state politics. Our political drama continues here in the state of Wisconsin as U.S. Senator Herb Kohl announced on Friday that he is not going to seek re-election. And our Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Milwaukee was at that press conference covering Senator Kohl's announcement. And Chuck Kornbach joins us by telephone with more on that. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Joy and Sean.
Yeah, thanks for being with us, Chuck. So was this a big surprise in political circles, Chuck, that Senator Kohl was not going to run again?
I don't know if a big surprise. It was somewhat surprising. There was the news recently that he had loaned his campaign some money, so you thought perhaps then he was gearing up for another run. But, you know, he just said in recent weeks he had some time to think about it and decided not to get in. And but even at 8 o'clock or 8:15 Friday morning when the announcement came out that a news conference was going to happen a little bit later that morning, it was still like, well, you know, he's announcing now to settle the question that he's getting in, but then you start thinking, well, he's announcing now because he's letting other people know he's not running, and it was the latter.
Yeah, and he said he's not running because it's time for someone else to have a chance?
That was his basic remark. He says his health is good, but he is 76, and maybe he thinks that at the time of another Senate term, if he had won re-election, that his health wouldn't be as good. You know, he's done a lot in his life. He's comfortable financially. Probably doesn't need another heated campaign. This one might have been even more than some of the other ones had been for him. So time to get out. He's got the Milwaukee Bucks yet. If he wants to be in public, he still owns the Milwaukee Bucks, and probably will be sort of this elder statesperson of the Democratic Party for a while if he wants that role too.
Yeah, certainly he. Well, did he fear his chances of re-election? Was he vulnerable in any way?
Well, all I know is that the Republican Senate Campaign Committee, especially after Ron Johnson won last year, had already started launching grenades, verbal grenades at Cole, and it was, even if Cole was going to win, no Republican had really emerged to challenge him. It was probably going to be a contentious campaign, and at some point, even if you're going to win, maybe you don't need that.
Mm-hmm. So is this a blow for the Democrats?
Well, I think it is. They had a candidate who could basically fund his own campaign and was seen as a moderate, and by a lot of people anyway. There was always some Republican business people that liked Cole. I know that because of his business background. Now the Democrats don't even have a firm candidate. There's plenty of names out there, but no one has quite stepped forward yet, and they're probably going to have to be some money raising to help this person.
Yeah. Well, talk a little bit about the Democrats who are thinking about running, and I know Sean has heard a little bit about that too. Is Russ Feingold going to run?
He said he has to talk with his family. I don't have inside information on any of these folks. It was just it would be an unusual turnaround to get beaten in 2010 and then run again in 2012, but a lot of unusual political stories this year, so no one can rule it out. Mike Tate, the Democratic Party chair, the other day mentioned a series of names: Ron Kind, the congressman of La Crosse, Kathleen Falk, the now retired, right, the Dane County executive, mm-hmm. Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, Kevin Conroy, but private businessman. So maybe, Tate did not rule out a private sector person getting into the race, sort of in the coal mold, if you will.
Yeah. Well, Senator Cole, is he at all fearful that his Senate seat will not be retained by Democrats?
Claims not to be publicly at the news conference on Friday. He said that he thought it was a good chance that the Democrats would retain the seat.
I think to some extent the Republicans have overreached and people have recoiled, and that the landscape will be more favorable. Not that I'm happy it has happened. I'm not happy it's happened. But I think the landscape will be favorable to Democratic candidates for office next year.
I think he's referring to collective bargaining controversies. Well, one thing we'll see as well is these recall elections that presumably will happen this summer in the state Senate races, and nine of them. How those play out may be a better barometer of where things are between the Republicans and the Democrats. On the Republican side, the list of names goes on there as well. Mark Newman is mentioned, Paul Ryan, others as well. Ryan said yesterday, I guess on one of the Sunday TV talk shows, that he might decide by the end of the week. He's been asked off and on about whether he's going to run. In fact, we have some tape of him responding to the question back in February.
I'm really just focused on that, and I'm not thinking about politics or these political things. It's not something I'm really right now thinking about or considering.
And I should have set that up by saying that he's really focused right now on the House Budget Committee, and we just saw Ryan get a lot of publicity for his budget proposal, including the Medicare voucher plan. That's a very controversial plan for him, and could either springboard him into a Senate race or make sure that he would face a lot of questions during a Senate campaign, his proposal.
I've also heard, and maybe Sean can weigh in on this as well, that Tammy Baldwin's campaign, or office anyway, someone is saying that she is likely to announce that she will run.
Yeah, at this point, you don't have anybody who's come out and said, I will run. And so you sort of have to judge their interest at this point based on how strong their feelers are. And you saw Tammy Baldwin's name mentioned in a number of the more insider reports, like Stuart Rothenberg keeps an eye on this stuff nationally. And very early in the day, very soon after it was announced that Senator Cole would not be running for re-election. He said that sources close to Baldwin said she was interested. That would indicate, you know, and you know, this is me paraphrasing Stuart Rothenberg, paraphrasing an unknown Baldwin supporter, but he's pretty, he follows this stuff pretty closely. So I think there is interest there, certainly with Baldwin. And then on the Republican side, if you want to look at the signals people are giving, Paul Ryan's sort of the, you know, he's probably the big question out there. If he wants in, it's going to be hard for these other Republicans to challenge him. But he's going to announce this week one way or the other. Aside from him, Mark Newman has been out very publicly saying, I'm interested in this. You know, he's sent out a number of press releases, letters to the editor, stuff like that for the last year or for the last several months. Jeff Fitzgerald, current Assembly Speaker, sent out a note last week also saying, you know, I'm humbled by all the support. Usually when you send out a note like that, you're thinking about it pretty strongly if you're, you know, putting out a note that says, boy, I'm humbled by all the calls of support and weigh my options. So, you know, it would seem like he's considering it more than, you know, your average Republican.
And is Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett saying anything specific, Chuck?
His comments on Friday, as I recall, were very specific to praising Senator Cole for his record. You know, I have the 1989-90 Blue Book out in front of me, looking at the last time there was a open Senate seat, and there were eight candidates, five on the Democratic side, three on the Republican side. A lot of folks jumped in back then. Whether they will, that many will this time, I sort of doubt it, just the way the costs of the campaigns are. But there, I wouldn't be surprised if there are primaries on each side. And then we've got the Ron Johnson, you know, technique of getting in just about, you know, 6 months before the election and having the money to blow everybody else away in the Republican side and get elected. So we could be talking a year from now about potential Senate candidates.
Yeah, well, and what impact, if any, does this have on, Sean, on the potential or possible recall of Governor Scott Walker? Russ Feingold's name has been bantied about as a potential candidate for governor, should there be a recall election.
Yeah, and obviously it's no easy task to force a recall election. Mm-hmm. We have to get more than 500,000 signatures. But if they do, then you need to have a candidate with almost immediate statewide name recognition, because the election period is relatively short. And if you're Democrats, that means you probably want to have somebody like a Feingold or a Barrett or a Ron Kind potentially, but somebody that a number of voters already know. And so if you have this other statewide race on the horizon, you know, that you don't have as deep of a bench to choose from, because you need to have somebody for each race. So yeah, it's a factor. I don't know how they navigate that.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Chuck, or on what I heard one pundit speculating on it, that Herb Cole would make a fine governor too?
I haven't heard the Cole part of it. He was, you know, a top executive of his company. I just think that he's, you know, as I say, the owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, which is the team that's had its problems, and he spoke quite glowingly of the team, and I think he'd rather get that team back at least above 500.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there for now. We'll have plenty of time to talk about this as the days and weeks go on.
Yeah, Chuck, I was going to say, yeah, including the Republican convention that's coming up this weekend, right, Sean?
Right. Yeah, coming right up this weekend.
So there will be possibly more names coming out of as potential candidates from that.
Possibly, and I would expect some internal maneuvering, too, to try to get the party faithful on your side.
Chuck, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter based in Milwaukee. He covered Senator Herb Cole's announcement on Friday that he would not be seeking another term in the U.S. Senate. And Sean Johnson stays with us. Sean is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, and we'll talk more about some other issues facing state government, other bills that are moving through the state legislature. And we'll welcome your questions for Sean and your reaction to some of these policy changes, including a bill to expand the school voucher program in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we'll talk about our best friends. Not the human ones, but the canine ones. We'll talk with the author of Dog Sense coming up after 8. Right now, we are talking about state politics with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. This is our weekly state capitol report when Sean brings us up to date on all the happenings under the state capitol dome. And boy, a lot is happening. Lots of bills are moving through the state legislature. We've already talked about the voter ID bill, which passed the state assembly last week and is still to be taken up by the Senate probably this week. Concealed carry legislation that was the subject of public hearings last week. No word exactly when the legislature is going to specifically take up concealed carry. But we also have to talk about school vouchers. The Milwaukee Private School Choice Program, Sean, is going to be expanded? What's going on?
Well, a couple things happened on that last week. One is the State Assembly passed a bill that would expand the school voucher program, where tax dollars are used to give parents vouchers to attend private schools. Private religious schools in many cases. That program was expanded from just schools in the city of Milwaukee, or it would be expanded from just schools in the city of Milwaukee to schools in Milwaukee countywide under a bill that passed the assembly last week. Also under that bill, the current enrollment cap of 22,500 students would be lifted altogether, so voucher schools could grow as much as they were capable of. Always a very emotional issue when it comes to the debate. Democrats feel like it's something that's potentially going to decimate public schools. Republicans are generally very strong supporters of the voucher school program. Say it's going to lead to more competition. That'll be better for everybody. But I dare say that the announcement the governor made last Monday when he was speaking to a national school choice group in Washington. Trumped all of that. The governor was the keynote speaker here and, basically unveiled a new policy proposal while he was speaking to this national voucher group.
I think one of the things between now and the time we finish this budget off at the end of June, we're going to be able to add and go beyond the boundaries of the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. We're actually going to be able to add communities like Racine and Beloit and even Green Bay. We're the home of the world champion, the Vince Lombardi Trophy, and add communities there as well, because every one of those communities deserve a choice as well. And with this budget, that's exactly what they're going to get.
I heard that Senator Mike Ellis, a Republican from Neenah, wasn't too thrilled with the expansion idea.
His immediate comments to the Journal Sentinel did not lead you to believe that he was. Mm-hmm. And he certainly carries a certain amount of, I would say, a certain amount of weight in the Republican Senate caucus still. So,
to see on that.
Yeah, you have to see on that. There is another big proposal out there by the governor that's still floating out there in his budget, which we've talked about before, that would remove income restrictions on the voucher program, move it away from being something that's just for low-income families and open it up to, others who are interested.
So the bill, though, that passed the assembly is just expanding it beyond the city of Milwaukee to Milwaukee County and lists the enrollment cap.
And maybe just is the wrong way to put that, because that's something, that's an issue. That's a fight that's been out there for a long time, lifting that enrollment cap and, expanding it geographically. But it is confined to those two issues.
Yeah. We have a caller who has been waiting with another issue. Joe in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Joe.
Yeah, good morning, Joy and Sean. Just wondering if you know anything about the resignation of Walker's Secretary of Workforce. It seems somewhat abrupt.
Yeah, it does, and I don't. The Department of Workforce Development Secretary Perez?
Yeah.
I do not know why. I mean, it was a few months into an administration to have a resignation so quickly. It does seem abrupt.
Yeah, there.
I mean, I think it had sort of the standard fare quote of happy to have served, going to move on to other ventures in the private sector, stuff like that. But it really does seem abrupt, and I don't know if there's any backstory or not.
Thank you very much, Joe, for the call. Well, I'm sure Sean will keep an eye on that particular issue as well. Sean, you covered something regarding the security plans for the state capitol. What was that all about?
Yeah, this is Department of Administration Secretary Mike Hipsch released a more detailed damage assessment from the protests over the period of basically early February to early March, early to mid-February, early to mid-March, after the governor introduced his collective bargaining plan, to the time of the last, really big rally right after they passed this out of the state assembly. Secretary Hipsch had originally said that damages were going to be roughly $7.5 million. Turns out there wasn't a whole lot of, detailed analysis put into that. It was sort of a number jotted on a piece of paper based on what capital renovation costs had been, a little less than a decade ago. The new figure for building damage, according to the Department of Administration, is $270,000. And when I say damage, that's including things like, according to DOA, like hand oil on the stairwells, and nicks in the marble that they attributed to the protests, and then some, like putting in new bushes out in the lawn, stuff like that.
But 200 and some thousand as opposed to original 7 million.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. The larger cost, mm-hmm. by far, according to DOA, is law enforcement costs. Or they said that the bill for law enforcement between Capitol Police and other law enforcement agencies around the state that have been brought to Madison to really ramp up security, and it is much different than it was in January still. There's two doors you can get in. You have to go through metal detectors, much different than it used to be at the Wisconsin State Capitol. Those costs just for that period from February to early mid-March were around $8 million.
No, that's in a pretty penny.
In excess of what you'd normally pay for security. That is a lot of money. And so Secretary Hipsch wouldn't say what it's cost since then, but he did say that security would continue as long as that collective bargaining issue is out there.
The issue that really instigated the demonstrations in the first place has in no means been resolved. And so as long as that issue is still hanging out there, I think it's prudent to make sure that we are going to be prepared for any additional or further security situations that may arise here.
So, so that means the screening and the security and the locked doors is going to continue.
Yes, and the collective bargaining thing, there's a pretty good chance that the lawmakers are going to pass that again as part of the budget that they're considering for the next 2 years. And, what kind of a response that will provoke from people, we don't know. But Republican lawmakers were hoping that courts would sort out this open meetings challenge to the original bill. In relatively short order. They were really hoping that the Supreme Court would take it up and say that a Dane County Circuit Court had no right to block this law from taking effect. But the Supreme Court really has not responded in the, this is an emergency fashion that Republican lawmakers were looking for, and they may not. I mean, the court is hearing arguments on whether it should get involved in this in June. That doesn't leave Republican lawmakers a lot of time. They want to make sure that they pass this thing.
Well, Sean, we have less than 30 seconds to go. There always seems to be something new every day. What are you going to be looking forward to covering this week?
There's a big hearing on an education bill, pretty broad education bill that was noticed just late last week, and that's up today. Joint Finance has a couple more meetings this week on everything from the Secretary of State to the Medical College of Wisconsin to Department of Public Instruction, schools. So a lot of stuff going on this week.
Thank you very much, Sean Johnson. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.